Ray Ferraro from TSN, hockey analyst, joins us once again. Ray, how you doing?
I'm doing well. What's going on today?
Oh, lots happening. Lots going on. Ray, you played a lot of power plays over your time in a lot of different organizations for a lot of different coaches. There's been a lot of onus on the Oilers' power play, and everybody wants to blame the head coach. I'm not one of those guys. I think the majority of the power play comes from your skill players and their ability to execute or not. How much coaching goes into the power play? How much of it is it on the players having played in the NHL and experienced it?
Well, the coaches set the scheme. They set the break-ins. They set the initial set. You can't reinvent the wheel. There's only so many ways you can run a power play. So after all the structure is set and the framework of the power play is set, then really coach has got nothing to do with it unless he puts the wrong guys on the ice.
Okay.
But they've got the right guys on, or they've got the guys they want on the ice. What I see with the Oilers power play is they couldn't be more stationary if they were statues.
Mm-hmm.
And that can't work anymore. Now, when I first started, the penalty killers, they rarely left the box. So even if you fumbled the puck on the board, you had time to get it back, and you could move it around. Now, look how aggressive teams charge the guy on the half wall, and then as soon as he passes it to the man on the goal line, the next defenseman is racing over. If your forwards and your defensemen aren't active in the zone, it's way too easy for the penalty killers. Because don't forget, for a power play to be successful, you actually have to score. For a penalty killing to be successful, you just got to get your hands on the puck and shoot it down the ice. So the onus is on the players more, way more than the coach. And what I see is just a lack of a willingness to be really mobile. Because if you are, a lot of times you're not going to get the shot. It's going to be somebody else. And I think some of that is just being young and inexperienced. Some of it is they've all been the go-to guy before.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it is Taylor Hall wants to play on the half wall. Well, that's where Ryan Nugent-Hopkins wants to play. Jordan Eberle's best suited for the half wall on the other side. Well, now you got guys standing all over the place. And that becomes a problem.
From year to year, Ray, everybody's like, well, nothing changed except the coach, because the Oilers were second. Now, their shooting percentage was off the charts, unsustainable. We get all that. You've been on teams where one year your power play was great. I'm sure you changed nothing. You come in the next year, and you can't score. Like, the Oilers were very good last year, down low, cross pass. Teams have clearly watched that on film. They've taken it away, and now the Oilers haven't found a way to adapt. That's what I see. What do you see?
When a team is really good at something, it's not like, again, not like when I started, there was no video. You know, you talked about what the other team did, or you talked about what the penalty killers did. Now they put together 3 or 4 or 5 minutes of clips. And, I mean, if you can't see it then, you're blind. I mean, everybody knows, puck goes high to half wall to goal line to across. The best power play in the league is the Washington Capitals. And one of the reasons is on their on the way they've set it up, their two passers are both left-handed. And they play on the goal line and on the half wall on the right side. Everybody else is right-handed, so there's 3 one-time options for them. And so physically it's set up perfectly so that if they don't pass it across to Ovechkin, then the man in the slot, who's probably Troy Brouwer, gets a one-timer, or Mike Green is behind him. And then on the next power play, it's Joel Ward and John Carlson. And the left-handed passers are always Nicholas Backstrom, and it might be the new youngster Kuznetsov. Last year it was Ribeiro. So there's lots of options. For the Oilers, their number one option always seems to be goal line and across, or goal line low attack. Rarely is it a shot from the point. And oftentimes, if you can shoot the puck, and again, Jason, as I'm thinking of this, this goes back to the construction of the team.
Yeah.
Because if you shoot the puck, and it doesn't go in, which most times it's not going to, then you've got to retrieve it. Well, I don't know that they're the best retrieval team that I've seen.
Yeah, agreed.
And as much as you talk about or we could talk about the Detroit power play in the 90s and early 2000s that was just lights out with Thomas Holmstrom in front of the net. You ask Mike Babcock, and he'll tell you that Holmstrom's real skill was his puck retrieval. Because when everybody focused on being in front of the net and the courage it takes to stand there, but as soon as the puck get knocked to the corner, Holmstrom would at least tie the defenseman, allow help to come, and now they don't have to go back down the ice again. And the Oilers don't retrieve the puck well enough when they decide to shoot it.
Yeah, and that's where you've got to find players who can do that. And Sean Horkoff was the guy who did that for them on their power play last year.
Correct. And so you have to find somebody that can do that for you, but they also have to be able to make a play, because you don't want to get the guy standing in front of the net that when the puck comes to him, he takes a bite out of it. You know, you want him to be able to make a pass. You're on the power play.
Ray Ferraro from TSN joins us. And right now, you know, and the Oilers have given up a lot of shorthanded goals this year. Some of them just from bad decisions in the offensive zone. We saw, you know, if you're the head coach, and you mentioned really the owner, you can talk about breakouts, sure, and you maybe have a way to enter the zone, and there's only so many ways you can enter the zone, obviously, in hockey. But at one point, we saw it briefly against Detroit, Ray, where they actually gave the third line, the last half of a power play just to try to send a message. Because at that point, that's all the coach can do, isn't there?
I don't know what else you can do. I mean, this is your team. This is the way it's built. These are the players you have. And, you know, you can go put the third line out. And lots of people think, well, why don't you do that all the time? Well, there's a reason those guys are on the third line. And that, you know, it's that they're not able to finish like the guys on the top two line. Honestly, that's why in a lot of cases they're there. I don't know what they can do other than you maybe having, you know, Nugent Hopkins on one unit and Hall on another all the time, and they run the half wall on either or. I don't really. How else are you going to change it up? Like, you can't take Eberle off the power play. You can't take Justin Schultz off the power play. Eventually, though, if they're scoring at 10 or 12%, you might as well use other guys too, because they'll score at 10 or 12%, and they probably won't get scored on as often. I mean, what have they given up, 10 or 11 shorthanded goals this year?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's absurd. You can't give up that many goals. And when I look at – see, I don't look at one specialty team as being more important than another. What I look at, what you have to have is your power play has to outscore the number of penalty-killing goals you give up. You know, I do my prep for games, and it's – and you look at teams that are minus 11 or minus 12 – on their special teams. And you're like, well, you can't win like that. You have to be at least near even. In most cases, the good teams are always plus on their special teams.
Yeah. Ray Ferraro joins us. Ray, before we get into other things in the NHL, big day for the Ferraro family. Your son Landon has been recalled by the Detroit Red Wings. Are you going to be making a quick trip out there just in case?
For the first time in the history of my broadcast schedule, I'm in the right place at the right time. I'm flying to Toronto tomorrow. I've got, I actually have the Leafs and Tampa Bay on Wednesday. So he won't know anything until after the morning skate tomorrow. They're waiting on a couple of guys. They got two guys banged up, and if one of them doesn't play, then he's in.
Yeah.
And so he won't know anything till then. So I'm going to get to Toronto. I'll land on the ground at 2:30 and make a decision there based on a text message that I'll get from him. So I hope he gets a chance. I'm telling you, Jason, it's a day we've all thought about in our house for a long time, and I hope he gets a chance to play. And I know he's real close to be in there, this call-up notwithstanding, and I just hope it's tomorrow. That would be great. That would be great for our family for sure, and be awesome for him. He's really excited.
It's a totally different ball game when it's your child compared to yourself. Obviously, that's what you worked for your whole life, was to get to the NHL. Do you remember the conversation that you had with your parents when you make that phone call? And how different is it now, I'm sure, when he gave you the call, hey, Dad, I'm getting called up to the show?
Well, he called this morning, and I could just tell in his voice that he was pretty excited about something. And you know, which, like most 22-year-old kids, the morning isn't their best time. And so he, I could tell something was up, and he said, hey, I just got called up. I'm going in to pick up my gear and head up to Detroit. And then he told me the story. And you know, I was so proud and so happy for him because, you see the work that he's put in. When I was putting the work in, it was just what I did. You know, I mean, like, that was what I did. I played hockey, and this was – the work wasn't work. It was just, again, what you did. And so when I called my dad, I actually got called at about 10:30 at night, which was 7:30 back in B.C., and I said, hey, Dad, I just got called up. And, you know, I mean, it was halfway through my first season in the minors. I mean, no, we didn't really expect it, and he was so excited. The problem was you couldn't get the games on TV like you could now.
Yeah.
And so he went down to the next day. He said, well, where do you think I can get it? And I said, well, maybe go down to the Rex Hotel in Trail. And there were these brothers that owned the place, the Regners, who were these tough customers. And so there were these, so there's this bar, you know, with a bunch of 25-year-old guys in there, and my mom and dad watching the Hartford Whalers, which weren't exactly the biggest draw in town, but the Regners made sure that they had the game on. And then the next night I played in Montreal and actually got my first goal. So it was they were pretty proud, and I'm sure they felt the same way I do today.
Ray Ferraro joins us from TSN. Ray, looking at it now, we're getting closer and closer with every day. You see more teams kind of fall out of the playoff picture, and one of them, the Ottawa Senators. Give me your thoughts on the overtime scenario that happened in Montreal on Saturday night.
Well, everybody's going to look at the refereeing and you know, was the puck frozen or not? And I don't know what you saw, but when I was watching out in a hockey night, I never did see an angle where I could see the puck.
Yep.
I mean, I couldn't tell you if it was frozen or not because I just couldn't see. It looked like it was a big kind of kerfluffle around there. And so I could see why Ottawa was super sour about that. While everyone's talking about the officiating, Ottawa had a 3-goal lead with 5 minutes left. I mean, you have to be able to close that out.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I get it. I would have been furious, too. I would have been like Bobby Ryan losing my mind or Spezza losing my mind. I would have been that way for sure. But the fact of the matter is their goalie imploded. I mean, you can see the concern with Leonard is that he's got no composure. And he came unglued during those last couple of minutes. And the other thing that was lost in there was P.K. Subban made two unbelievable plays on the third and fourth goal. And for everybody that likes to boot PK in the shins, they never like to say that he made a really good play. And he made two unbelievable plays. The second one to Desharnais, who made that was a really athletic catch of the pass and shot that he made to tie the game up with 0.4 seconds left. I mean, doesn't that tell you about Ottawa, though? I mean, they score enough goals. All year it's been the same thing. They just can't defend. And I don't know what's happened because last year it was pretty much the same group. And they defended hard, and they were a scrappy team that overcame a pile of injuries. And this year, they've just never got on track defensively. They give up way too many shots, way too many chances.
Ray Ferraro from TSN joins us. They're out. Carolina is another team that is pretty much out. New Jersey's, they've lost two in a row. They're on life support. It's kind of coming down now. They got the Rangers and Columbus with 76 points. And then you've got Washington, Detroit, 74 and 73. Detroit does have a few games in hand. They're really banged up, though. Who do you like holding on to those final two playoff spots in the East?
Well, if I were to pick, I mean, I like the Rangers. I think they've got enough, and I think somewhere St. Louis will get untracked here in the next 3, 4, 5 games. You know, it seems like the buzz of the trade is off, and now this is where I am, and wow, nothing's the same as it was in Tampa Bay. And I'm sure when he goes to make a pass, he's realizing he doesn't see Steven Stamkos standing on the other side. And sometimes you should be careful what you wish for. And so I think that St. Louis has really seen an adjustment that maybe he didn't foresee. But I think they've got enough. I think Columbus is really good. I don't know that they're a team that anybody would think is going to be this good, but they skate, they're physical. Their goaltenders had two unbelievable years in a row. I don't think Washington's got enough. They can't and don't defend very well. So for Detroit, I mean, I think the answer is going to be, can they get Datsyuk and a couple of these other guys back with enough time to make a rush at it? I mean, that's really it. I mean, without Zetterberg for the rest of the year, they're going to need Datsyuk back at least at some point. And they're hoping that his knee is okay and that he's going to be able to play. But you can't be missing, you know, 7, 8, 9 guys and expect that you're going to put together a great run.
The Dallas Stars got blown out by Winnipeg. Winnipeg keeps their hopes alive. They're 4 back. Vancouver's 3 back. And then Phoenix and Dallas are tied, Ray. Lettinen's coming back off the concussion. Who do you like out of those 4 teams? Only one of them's going to make it. Who do you like?
You know, that's a tough one for me. Vancouver and Winnipeg, no. I mean, Vancouver, I think, has played 2 more games than everybody else. And tonight is going to be a third one. They play in Tampa Bay tonight. If Lettinen is okay, I think it's going to be Dallas. Don't forget, just because he comes back doesn't mean that he's going to be right at the peak of his game, right? You know, I mean, who knows how he's going to feel. So I would have some concerns there, but I would rate them in order, Dallas, Phoenix, Vancouver, Winnipeg.
One last one for you, Ray. The World Championships, you know, something that obviously had the opportunity to play in. Coming in an Olympic year now, do players still, because, you know, there's uncertainty of what happens, and I know the players really want to go to the Olympics in 2018. Do you think it's easier now than ever to get the guys to want to go to the World Championships because of the Olympics? And this year, do you think you'll see a lot of guys who maybe in previous years wouldn't have went just to try to make sure they're in the back of whoever's going to be the new GM of Team Canada?
Much easier now than it used to be. I mean, there'd be 8 or 9 guys that would always say no, and, you know, there was no Olympics, so there was nothing really to hang over their head. And so they said no, and they went on with their summer. I think what we'll see is a really young Canadian team. You'll see, you know, guys that maybe didn't get the chance to play at the Olympics, some guys that were real close. And, of course, you're looking at Hall and Eberle for sure, and, you know, guys of Justin Schultz, in all likelihood. I mean, those are the types of guys that you're gonna see over there. And I think, like I said, I think it's easier now to get guys to go than ever before. I don't know, Jason, what guys are gonna think of if they'll think far enough ahead to 2018, because there's so much uncertainty of whether the players will go anyway.
Ray, as always, good to talk to you, and hopefully you'll be in Detroit tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm hoping so too. You just never know. But we're, like I said, it's been a real fun day so far, and we're hoping it goes good tomorrow too.
Appreciate your time, Ray.
Hey, thanks, Jason. Have a great day. We'll talk to you next week.